I do have to
tell you, I have been something more than gratified at noticing that when I'm with some of you and someone in our presence says, so far, there's this echo of so far. Like, something's finally getting through. A few of you have been to the worship service already. Some of you have not. When you go, if you go to the traditional service, which is if you're in here, you can't go to the gathering because you've got to be at two places at once. You will hear the choir sing a special, and they don't quite get the balance right. And I'm not talking about musical balance. But I want to read to you from Isaiah 9, verse 6, a verse that all of us should know. The text for what the choir sings is this: for a child is born to us, a son is given to us, the government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. Those of you who were in the 8 o'clock service, do you remember the title of what we sang? Those of you who sang it, do you remember the title of what we sang? For unto us a child is born. What's left out of that title?
The last one.
What is left out of that title? For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. I would like to say to you, those two phrases are not a repeat of one another. Those two phrases are very, very, very different. And both together are making a statement about Messiah, a prophecy about Messiah. Unto us a child is born. What does that speak to?
Jesus'
humanity. Unto us a son is given. What does that speak to? He is God's son. That speaks to his divinity. And Isaiah caught all of that complicated thought in two phrases. And in the choir special this morning, we sang, for unto us a child is born, way too often, and unto us a son is given, way too infrequently. And I've taken steps to where if we ever do it again, maybe we can get that balance back out. There's places we can do that. The special nature of Christmas is not just a beautiful baby on a bed of straw. It is who that baby is. And if you come back at 4 o'clock today, the choir and the narration is going to try to impress upon you the most important piece of Christmas, which is God with us. And that's what those first two phrases in Isaiah talk about. Now, having said that, what was your assignment? You're off the hook. What was your assignment? What was your assignment? To read the book of Job, focused on chapter 28 and after. Okay? How many times have you had an assignment like this? By this point, how many times should you have read chapter 28? Probably at least eight. Okay. So, very, very quickly, to try to get some of our visitors caught up with where we are. We are in the book of Job. Job starts with something Job is not told about. Job starts with a meeting between God and Satan at God's throne. Satan is either with God's angels or among God's angels. And there's probably a theological difference between those two. But in any event, there he is. Last week in the second hour, somebody gave away the punchline of the book of Job. And you weren't there because you were in the first hour. I do this twice just in case you don't know. Here's what the person said. Did you ever think about the fact that Satan might not have noticed Job if God had not brought Job to Satan's attention? Think back to what God said. Now, I've been thinking about this for a while, but I wasn't ready for you to think about it. Maybe I should be. Satan says, in answer to the question, where have you been? I've been on earth, roaming around, looking here and there. And God says, what are those first three words? Did you notice? My servant Job. And then, what are the words he uses to describe Job?
Upright,
pure, honest, blameless is the one we're grabbing onto. Okay? A man who fears God and shuns evil. Third chapter, the roof falls in on Job. He loses his family, he loses his wealth, all of his children are dead, all of his possessions are taken away. And a little bit later, after another little scene in heaven, he loses his health. How many friends does Job have? Watch this. How many friends does Job have? Lots.
Lots.
But three of them show up. Maybe more, but three are pulled out by the Bible and are given voice. Okay, who are those three? The first one was Eliphaz. The second is? Pause for a moment. I'm signing letters, emails to my children with Bill Dad. Sort of seems to fit. One L, Bill Dad. And the third one was? So far we're doing okay. When they come, the first thing that happens is they're looking for Job and they don't see him. Sitting right there, and they don't see him. Why don't they see him? Because he is so disfigured by his disease. They don't even recognize him. When they do recognize him, they're shocked into a silence that lasts how long? Thank you. I'm training them well. 7 days and seven nights they sit with him. Sitting with somebody through the night is special. Being able to sit in silence, that's real special. Who broke the silence?
Job.
What did he say? Are you getting to the point where you got these answers down? I wish I'd never been born. Who spoke first among his friends? Eliphaz. And after he finished speaking, what happened? Job responded. And then? Bildad. And then? Job. And then? Zophar. And then? Job. And then? Eliphaz again, and we start through a cycle, right? We are in Job 28. Where are we in this process? We're in the third cycle. We're at the end of the third cycle. Bildad has spoken very, very briefly. And Job is now responding for several chapters. There's a couple of commentators out there who think that there's a place or two that it doesn't sound like Job, it sounds more like what Zophar might have said. And if you read all the commentaries, you may see that. It's a minority opinion. I'm happy to follow what I have here. My electronics just turned off. Let me see. Yay, I'm back. But in any event, this is the end of the third cycle. Around chapter 32, everything's going to come to a stop. Book of Job's not through. And if you've been doing your homework assignment, you should know that. So far, okay? Okay. Chapter 28, we looked at the first few verses of this last time, and I told you we're going to do it again today. Verse 28 almost seems to come out of nowhere. Job is suddenly talking about something he has not talked about before. And the way he talks about it is poetic, the way he talks about it is descriptive, and the way he talks about it is powerful. If you have your Bibles open, follow along with me. Silver has its mines, and gold a place for refining. Iron is extracted from the earth, and smelted rocks yield copper. My profession as a chemist, my ears perk up at this. What do I realize? They're talking about metallurgy. They're talking about reduction processes, because that's the way you get iron to transform back into a metal, is you have to reduce the iron. You have to win the iron from the ore, the old-time metallurgists would say. And it also tells me they've got copper down. That sort of tells me where they are. There's the Bronze Age, the Iron Age. You sort of know where they are. Copper is a little easier than iron. If they're pulling iron out, they're pretty far along. Man makes an end of darkness. To the utmost limit he digs the black rock in shadow, dark as death. Foreigners bore into ravines and unfrequented places, swing suspended far from human beings. Let me flip this over to another translation. They sink a mine shaft into the earth far from where anyone lives. They descend on ropes swinging back and forth. Can you get a picture of what these people look like? I'm talking about silver mines. Okay? How deep were the mines in Roman times? And we're talking here about way before Roman times. You know how deep the mines were?
No.
Several hundred feet easily in some places. Okay. Problem is, you can't suck water up more than 32 feet. So the Romans figured out how to keep the mines from flooding by figuring out things about pressure, things about vacuum, things about pumping systems, all those kinds of things way back then. That it wasn't until in the 1700s before we started to really understand what was going on. They had practically figured out how to do some of these things. And it's amazing to go back and look at some of the history of those. I can remember being in a salt mine in Austria one time.
Yeah.
Sliding down a long tunnel. Way down into the earth. Some of you have done that as well. Let me come back to this. Food is grown on the earth above. This is verse 5. But down below, the earth is melted as if by fire. When you first start going down into the earth, it gets cooler. But Job, 2,000 or 3,000 years before Jesus probably, knew that down in the center of the earth was molten metal. An iron nickel mass, molten, the geologists tell us, is at the center of the earth. Job knew that. How did he know that? We don't know. Here the rocks contain precious lapis lazuli, and the dust contains gold. These are treasures no bird of prey can see, no falcon's eye observe. No wild animal has walked upon these treasures. No lion has ever set his paw there. People know how to tear apart flinty rocks and overturn the roots of mountains. That's going on in West Virginia now. They cut tunnels in the rocks and uncover precious stones. They dam up the trickling streams and bring to light the hidden treasures. Verse 12. But do people know where to find wisdom? Where can they find understanding? Verse 13. No one knows where to find it, for it is not found among the living. It's not here, says the ocean. Nor is it here, says the sea. It cannot be bought with gold. It cannot be purchased with silver. Do you hear an echo there of the disciples after the resurrection? Silver and gold have I none, but what I have I'll give to you. It's worth more than all the gold of Ophir, greater than the precious onyx or lapis lazuli. Verse 17, wisdom is more valuable than gold and crystal. It cannot be purchased with jewels and mounted in fine gold. Coral and jasper are worthless in trying to get it. The price of wisdom is far above rubies. Precious peridot, I don't know what that is, from Ethiopia, cannot be exchanged for it. Topaz, your says? Outstanding. I'm glad you're following along. It is worth more than the purest gold. Verse 20, but do people know where to find wisdom? Where can they find understanding? Verse 21, it is hidden from the eyes of all humanity. Even the sharp-eyed birds in the sky cannot discover it. Destruction and death say, we've only heard rumors of where wisdom is to be found. Verse 23, what does it say? God alone knows the way to wisdom. He alone knows where it can be found. For he looks throughout the whole earth and sees everything under the heavens. He decided how hard the wind should blow and how much rain should fall. He made the laws for the rain and laid out a path for the lightning. Then he saw wisdom and evaluated and set it in place and examined it thoroughly. And this is what he says to all of humanity. The fear of the Lord is true wisdom. To forsake evil is real understanding. What did God say about Job? Way back. Did you notice my servant Job? Pure and honest. Take about four translations, you get about eight words. And then he says, fears God and shuns evil. Do you hear an echo of that here? And just as quick as it comes, the chapter is gone. Job is in such suffering, it's hard to imagine. And yet in the middle of this, he's still thinking. And as he's thinking, he distills a bit of truth, a nugget of truth. And it's huge. It's gigantic. Chapter 28 almost stands alone. But it's followed by chapter 29. So what happens at chapter 29?
He starts up again.
What happens in chapter 29 is fascinating. Job looks back over his life and he remembers what it was like before the calamity. What's your first word in verse 3? I know what it is in the translation I'm looking at. Is yours when? How about verse 4? Mine has when in that spot too is the first word. Okay, watch how it goes. Follow along in yours. I long for the years gone by when God took care of me. Has God stopped taking care of him?
No.
Job thinks so. The evidence Job has to look at, that's the conclusion he has reached. I long for the years gone by when God took care of me, when he lit up the way before me and I walked safely through the darkness. When I was in my prime and God's friendship was felt in my home. You can put the word when in at first of most verses in here. When the Almighty was still with me and my children were still around me. When my cows produced milk in abundance and my groves poured out streams of olive oil. Those were the days when I went to the city gate and took my place among the honored leaders. The young stepped aside when they saw me, and even the aged rose in respect at my coming. Princes stood in silence, put their hands over their mouths. The highest officials of the city stood quietly, holding their tongues in respect. All who heard me praised me. All who saw me spoke well of me. Verse 12, my first word should be because. It is for, but it really means because. Do you see that? Why were all these things happening? Verse 12 says, here's why. Because I assisted the poor in their need and the orphans who required help. Verse 13, how does yours start there? The first phrase, maybe up to the first comma or the first punctuation mark. What does it say? Yeah. Mine says, I helped those without hope, comma, and they blessed me. Somewhere in here, it should start occurring to you, I see a problem. Have you seen a problem yet?
Yeah, because he thinks it's what he's done.
Have you seen a problem yet? This is really the first time you start to clearly see maybe Job has a problem. Mm-hmm. His problem is not being right with God. But his problem is his interpretation of some of the things that are happening. Did you pick up on that? Mm-hmm. What did it say? I helped those without hope and
they blessed me.
Okay. When you walk out of a church service around here these days, do you walk out saying, wow, Tom Stocks is a great preacher? Or do you walk out saying, wow, I was able to worship today. I've seen my Lord more clearly. You walk out of Sunday school saying, wow, Myers is a great teacher. Or do you walk out saying, my goodness, I'm starting to see the Lord more clearly than I ever did before. Can you turn without losing your place? Can you turn to 2 Corinthians 9? Second Corinthians 9. Anybody remember what's going on in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9? Or do you have a study Bible that has little headings that help you sort of cheat your way through here? I've got a heading on verse 8 that says, it's not part of the Bible record, but it's put in here to help me as I read this. It says, organization of the collection. Oh, okay, that helps me remember. Remember what happened? There was a famine going on in Jerusalem, and the persecutions that had taken place had driven Christians out. And now Paul was helping them to look back towards what we've been taught not to call the mother church, but to the mother church in Jerusalem, and say, these people are starving, they need help. We need to take up a collection. And now he's talking specifically to the people in Corinth about their part in the collection. Okay, and he does that for a couple of chapters. There's lots and lots of important stuff in here, but I want you to focus on let's start at verse 10. I was going to start a little later than that, but let's start at verse 10. There are lots of prosperity preachers who use these two verses, in my considered opinion, incorrectly. That's maybe the kindest way I could say it. The one who so freely provides seed for the sower and food to eat, that's a quote from Isaiah 55, will provide you with an ample store of seed for sowing and make the harvest of your uprightness a bigger one. You will be rich enough in every way for every kind of generosity that makes people thank for what we have done. Makes people thank God for what we've done. For the help provided by this contribution not only satisfies the needs of God's holy people, but also overflows into widespread thanksgiving to God. Because when you have proved your quality by this help, they will give glory to God for your obedience, the obedience which you show in professing the gospel of Christ, as well as for the generosity of your fellowship towards them and towards all. Three times, what does he say? The things that you do result in praise and thanksgiving to God. That's the way it's supposed to be. And for the first time, you see the banana peel underneath Job's feet. Because what did Job say? I've done all these things. And I just lost my electronics. Give me a moment. I need to touch it every once in a while. What's that? All who heard me praised me. All who saw me spoke well of me. For I assisted the poor in their need and the orphans who required help. I helped those without hope, and they blessed me. Three times, what does he say? Me, me, me. And it's the first false note that you've seen for Job. What's he remembering? He's remembering what it was like. I caused the widows' hearts to sing for joy. Everything I did was honest. Righteousness covered me like a robe, and I wore justice like a turban. I served as eyes for the blind and feet for the lame. I was a father to the poor, and I assisted strangers who needed help. Verse 17 is powerful. Read that verse and tell me what it says. When I needed to, I used violence to protect the poor. Well, I don't know. There's a righteous war theory that's out there that people talk about. You need to give some thought to that. Sometimes force needs to be met with force to protect the weak. That's the debate that we're having right now that Senator Tim Kaine is asking the Congress to have. Maybe for the first time we really ought to listen to our laws, and we've got the War Powers Act, and maybe the Congress ought to come in and together with the executive decide what ought to be done. I don't know what ought to be done. I wasn't elected to Washington and don't want to be. But Job is saying when force was needed to protect the poor, I was ready to use force. Is that the way yours reads? I've broke the jaws of godless oppressors and plucked victims from their teeth. I think that's metaphorical, but I don't think it's very metaphorical. Verse 18 reveals the second of Job's issues. What are the first two words that you had?
I thought.
That's mine. Mine says that too. I thought. And then I have quotation marks. Does yours have quotation marks?
Yeah.
This is what I thought. What did I think? I thought, surely I will die surrounded by my family after a long good life. Verse 19, first word. I'm going to change four to because. Because I'm like a tree whose roots reach the water, whose branches are refreshed with the dew. That sounds like Psalm 1. Man is like a tree planted by rivers of water. That sounds good. New honors are constantly bestowed on me, and my strength is continually renewed. Everyone listened to my advice. They were silent as they waited for me to speak, and after that I spoke, they had nothing to add, for my counsel satisfied them. They longed for me to speak as people long for rain. They drank my words like a refreshing spring rain. And when they were discouraged, I smiled at them, and my look of approval was precious to them. Like a chief, I told them what to do. I lived like a king among his troops and comforted those who mourned. If you read that swiftly without stopping to think about what you're reading, it's going to sound pretty positive. If you slow down and look a little bit more closely, there's a false note or two or three hiding in there. Did you hear those false notes? Okay. Guess what chapter 30 is about? Don't look. You don't need to look. You've already done your homework, right?
But this is where he is today.
First two words.
But now.
But now is the way mine starts. Does yours start something like that? Chapter 29. This is what it was like. And if you listen carefully, you see the false notes. Now let's pause for a minute. What were false notes?
Everything was going to his credit.
He's accepting praise that should have been directed towards God.
I would have thought that it was God speaking. You know, if I didn't know the context, I would think somehow this is something that God is saying.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I can see that. But you knew it wasn't, right?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Just checking. Yeah, we'll skip that one. What were the false notes? False note number one, he was being praised and he was feeling that adulation and he got used to it. Hey, I like this. Was he doing good things?
Yes.
He was doing terrifically good things. Should people have been grateful?
Yes.
You bet. Towards whom?
God.
Towards God for having such a devoted servant. Not towards the devoted servant. No, I'm not going to go there either. No, we don't have time to go there. We don't have time to go there today. There is a comment or two that's here. But what's the second false note?
He's accepting the praise from God for himself.
Yeah, that's to me the first false note. Mm-hmm. He's accepting that. I draw your attention to verse 18, first two words.
I
thought this is the way it's going to be. What's that?
His expectation.
Close. Almost there.
Feels like he deserves it.
Almost there.
Expectation.
Presumption.
Presumption.
Entitlement. I have had one spectacular experience with that. And I'm not sure there's time to tell you, but I'm going to try. I was commissioned a second lieutenant in the Army. I went through basic officer course, and I was immediately put on the shelf, and they forgot about me for 5 years. But I had an 8-year obligation. They were about to promote me. They had already promoted me to first lieutenant without me doing anything. And they were about to promote me to captain, because there's a mandatory thing. You either throw them out or you promote them. And they hadn't seen me for 5 years. So they called me up and said, go to Fort Bragg. You're going to spend 2 weeks at Fort Bragg. I showed up on Monday. Let me see if I can make this really quick. They said, we have been giving the troops tests about chemical attacks, biological attacks, nuclear attacks, and we haven't had time to grade the test. You're a college professor. Why don't you grade the test? That's what we have for you to do for this 2 weeks. They put me in the room with a big stack of tests. I finished those about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I came down to the colonel's office and said, okay, I got those finished. Where are the next ones? And the colonel said, the next ones? We thought that would take you 2 weeks.
You made a mistake.
why don't you go back to the barracks? You've got the base, the officer BOQ, the bachelor officer quarters. Why don't you go back there? The PXs sell paperback books. They got a pool over there. Why don't you come back tomorrow? We'll find you something to do. What time should I come back? Well, not before 10. It's going to take us a while to find you something to do. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I came in about 9:30 or 10. I left about 2 or 2:30. Went back to BOQ, put my feet up, swam in the pool, read a book. Friday, the guy, the colonel says, what's going on back home? And I said, well, actually, my son's having a birthday party. Oh, you can't miss that. Take off. I said, sir, I have read my orders, and my orders are I'm here for 2 weeks. Oh, if I write you a pass, it's okay. You go to your son's birthday party. Get back here on Monday. What time? Get back by noon. That'll be fine. I'll give you enough time to drive back here Monday morning. I came home, went to the birthday party, drove back Monday morning. Finished about, got in about noon, finished about 3. Tuesday afternoon, I came in at 2, and I said, okay, sir, I finished that. I guess I'll knock off now. What had I just expressed?
Presumption.
Okay? The colonel looks at me, and the major, whose boots were up on the desk, said, and I quote, you ain't going anywhere, boy. You're confined to the building. I looked at the colonel, and I said, what you talking about, sir? He said, don't worry about it. We're all confined to the building. There's a civil war going on in Zaire. There are French and American citizens trapped between the warring parties. And President Carter has put the 82nd Airborne on alert to go to Zaire and rescue them. And son, you are in the 82nd Airborne. And you're going. I've been on the phone with the general. You have proven yourself so useful these last week and a half. You're not on any obligation. So we're going to put you with the logistics people. We're going to teach you what you need to go. You're going to go in on the second wave and help log in all the equipment, all the men, all the other stuff, make sure nothing gets lost. They gave me a 45. They gave me an M16. They gave me ammunition for both. They gave me field gear. They started training me. I trained until I think it was 1 a.m., had me back up at 5. I trained all day Wednesday, all day Thursday. Friday at 11 o'clock, the colonel comes walking in. He says, the French just went in. Carter has taken off the alert to let the people sleeping by the planes. George Ivy's son was one of the people sleeping by the planes. People sleeping by the planes, let them go take a shower because they've been sitting by the planes ready to go for the last 4 days. If you can out-process in the next 2 hours, you can go home. Out-processed in 45 minutes. What happened on Tuesday has stuck in my mind. I had gotten used to something, and I assumed a privilege that was not mine. My life would have been a bit different if I had gone to Zaire. Can I call my wife and tell her I might not come home? Nope. All calls off post or shut down. I'm one of the few people you will ever meet who was in the 82nd Airborne for a total of 12 days. That's a true statement. There's presumption in here. There's privilege in here. There's accepting thanks rather than deflecting thanks. I serve a great God. I'm glad I was able to help you, but God's the one you need to thank. That's not coming from Job. And for the first time, maybe we're seeing what's going on. And we've run out of time. So what are we supposed to do when we run out of time? We're supposed to listen to whatever Billy has to say. Yes, Billy.
Before you say a prayer, we're going to need volunteers to clean up what we mess up so everybody's running out the door.
Thank you, Billy. If you want to know what happens in chapter 30, what do you have to do?
Breathe.
And
the rest of you.
Come back next week.
Come back.
Let's have a word of prayer. Our Father, in Job, we see one of the most special people in the whole of the Bible. But all of a sudden, in chapter 28, we see him hit a high point. And in chapter 9, it looks like another high point, but hidden in there are some signals that Job still needs some correction. Lord, keep us from pride. Keep us from presumption. Keep us humble and grateful and obedient and responsive, and let us never take praise for ourselves that is due to you. Especially in this Christmas season, I thank you for our Savior. I thank you that you both allowed a child to be born, but you also gave us your son. Help us think about these things as we go through the Christmas season, for we ask all this in your son's name.